What's going on, everybody? We are here for another week of the podcast. I don't really have a lot of announcements to get out of the way in the beginning, except for I ordered a bunch of Cue It Up towels for your bag. And if you would like one, please head over to the Cue It Up network page and scroll for a little while till you see it. Or you can also go to my personal page, Nate Mindham, and you can see that they are also for sale there. And that's pretty much all I have to get out of the way in the beginning, I believe. Yep, pretty much. So there's no Patreon updates or anything like that. I do want to give a shout out to a couple of the people who have been doing a ton of sharing to help us out with our, I don't know, little thinger that we're doing to try to increase the listener base of the podcast. So without further ado, a couple of the people I want to give a shout out to for that is Tracy Thorson, as well as Warren Mindham, my father. You better share my stuff. Ben Brady has been absolutely killing it. He's probably been far and away the biggest share that we've had so far. So thank you very much to Ben. And we'll also give a shout out to Lil Chris. He shared the streams as well. And I think for the most part, that's kind of it. Let's see. Keith David, Tina Hernandez will also give you a shout out. We'll give a shout out to Gloria Jean. They shared the live stream that we did today for this. Other than that, I guess it's yeah, I guess not too many shares, but hopefully that picks up and we'll see. And then as far as sharing the page itself, we'll give a shout out to Carlos Branch. He's actually shared the page several times, so I really appreciate that. And yeah, I guess that's pretty much it from what I'm seeing for the updates. So yep, I guess with that out of the way, let's jump right into the podcast for today.
I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Is this going to be like live, or is this going to be like shown later? Like the podcast version or the live version. I always get
Oh, this
confused.
one's, yeah, this one. Well, we kind of switch back and forth, but this one's live because usually when we have like three or more people, we end up doing live. I don't know why that's the case. I guess we just kind of do it that way, and I don't know,
So that's a
a little bit
stream
more.
issue.
I
That's
don't
a
need to
man
be
of
given a
every
heads up
problem.
because sometimes I'm looking a little grizzly. I'm not so clean cut like you, Nate. So I need
Well,
to,
what are you talking about? I shaved last year. This isn't grizzled.
I believe that
Mike, are you on your couch?
I'm
The heck,
at,
man. Are
yeah, well, I'm on a couch. It's not my couch, but I'm about 4 hours away from home at my buddy's place. So
Okay. Are
the
you
desk was
ever
a
home?
little filled
Do
up.
you ever go home?
I wish I could say I was home more, but I'll be home hopefully in a week. So for 2 weeks. I'm grateful.
He's got the jump cues. He's making jump cues right now.
Yeah,
Well,
it's
you're making jump cues.
I'm help I'm trying not to kill myself on a lathe, pretty much. Yeah.
I see. That can happen if
Yeah.
you wear gloves. That you
Yeah,
have to be
no.
careful with when you have a
Yeah,
lathe.
no. No
If one
gloves.
of
I don't
the
want
fingers
anything to
of
get
the
caught
gloves get caught
up.
in that lathe,
You're fucked.
it
Oh,
can be
sorry.
a real
You're in a bad
mess.
game. You're in a
Yeah,
bad
truck.
game.
You're trucked.
I had a I was doing a Roto-Rooter kind of a deal with the drain water from my home where it goes out into a field, right, from the sump pump. And I had one of those big machines that you send the dealy bop 100 feet in there. I mean, this was a rental major deal, and I got a glove caught in it, and it
Oh, yeah.
tore my shirt arm off and ripped it right off and ate it.
You
It
gotta be.
wrapped me up a little bit too in the process.
I believe it, man. You
Yeah,
gotta be
you don't
careful
get it,
when you're
take
in a
you
machine
with
like
you.
that.
I
Yeah,
wasn't
no
injured
kidding.
from that.
Thankfully.
Yeah, well, here we are. We're gonna do another week's worth of podcasting, and I wanted to tell my sweet joke, and then Rob went going, and then I didn't tell it. But you said you're in a bad game. I was gonna say, yeah, you're a lot like Oscar this coming week.
Now, is
Listen,
this an
it,
Oscar
I
joke?
can't just Just because I crack on my boy doesn't mean I can let just anybody crack on my boy. So that there's a fine line there. So I got to
stick up for my boy, fellas.
He's
Who's house at Hard Times, right? They're playing at Hard Times.
If y'all can hear me, he's getting ready to go and play Omar. So give me 1 second.
At a neutral site somewhere?
No, they're playing in Oscar's room.
Oh, they're playing in Oscar's room.
Yeah.
Well, you have to think the fan base is going to be rooting for the hometown boy.
You would think so. We just lost Mike, but I think he's having problems with his audio, so he's going to join right back in. So, but yeah, and here he is.
Well, I had some trees cut down at home here to get
there. We go.
So that I don't get this warning about the stream that comes up. It seems to have helped.
Sorry, boys, but can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can
hear you. All right. Yeah, I was saying, yeah, Oscar and Omar coming up. He's getting ready. And you know what? I haven't talked to Oscar over the last like few weeks. It really amazed me how much he's preparing for it. I don't want to give away too much, but it's like next level stuff that like you would expect from any professional athlete. And, you know, whether it's using technology and besides just putting in the effort on the table. So he's putting in the work right now. But well, actually right now he's in Arizona, but he had been putting in the work, I should say.
did he by chance call Demetrius and set up a boot camp with him at all?
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say no to that one, Rob.
No, probably yeah. Not.
Just a guess. Yeah. So I guess because
I was wondering about that myself, about Oscar. Well, how is he going to prepare for this? Is he really going to take this serious? Is he going to think, just because I'm a great player and I'm on my home table and everything else, I got to show him? He must have watched the last tournament Omar was in.
they're betting, you know, what, 15,000 aside? Is that right, Mike?
No, they're betting 20 aside. 20 in the middle. Aside. And then I know there's a lot of side action. I mean, before the World Championships, anytime they had gone and matched up, Oscar either played Omar even playing 10 ball or I gave him the 8. And this was a couple of years ago. But when you're coming off of Omar being in the finals of the World Championship, yep. I mean, he's vogue right now. He's popular right now. And Omar's a great guy, like, in general. I mean, both of them are really just genuinely good guys. Like, I mean, if you ever get a chance to meet Omar,
Oscar has a family, right? He has got a wife and kids and stuff.
Yeah, he's got two girls, and he owns his own business now, Hard Times in Sacramento, which is actually where they're going to be playing at. So he's got his hands full, whereas Omar is still as much of a full time pro as you can be right now, given the world circumstances, right? So, but. Yeah, I mean, Omar pockets the ball really good, and his 10-ball break, he can be consistent with it at times. Well, I mean, he can be consistent with it. The last time we saw Omar, though, he was playing Dodong, and James just ran over him. I mean, it was brutal. Like, I don't know if y'all guys got to watch that, but James was breaking, like the best 10-ball break I've ever seen in person. Yeah. I mean, and he was getting the pop. He was getting the side. He was getting the four railers. Everything was just dressed. The one ball was creeping by the bottom left every time. Like, it was one of the best, like, sets of 10 ball that I've ever seen from a player in my life. Like, Dodong was just breaking incredible.
What was his, what kind of runs did he have then in breaking like that?
I mean, I think he had like an 8 and a 7.
Oh, yeah.
Going to 25, yeah, I believe. Wow.
Two innings against 15 games.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty strong, right? But here's the thing. Not many people know. The night before, Omar's playing Dennis 10-ball even on a 9-foot. It wasn't on the stream, but it was on the side, and I was there. And this is at Sticks and Stones in Dallas. And Omar won pretty convincingly against Dennis. I think it was something like 13-3, and Omar was betting his own, just to kind of help getting him ready. But that night he had gotten his break cue stolen. So I don't know how much that had an effect on Omar's psyche going into the next
game. Yeah, I'm sure it has.
And I think it was his passport too that had gotten stolen at the same time. So
oh,
it was pretty
great.
It was.
That's rough.
No,
that's not a little extra on your head though. Maybe getting in the way of your concentration there. Yeah.
Right, but I mean, like James, just it's kind of hard when you get hit with an 8 and a 7 too, right? So I mean, James just kind of punished them, but yeah, I mean, Oscar's best game right now is 10 ball, but what did people just see right now, right? They just saw Oscar go. I think he won one match in World Championships, and then he went home, and Omar went to the finals. So.
I think Oscar got two, but he didn't make it to the final 64. I think he got two, but I could be wrong.
Do you guys know what?
Well, hold on, Rob, real quick. Okay. Rob, let me actually give the since we're talking about the specs of this match, why don't we actually go over them quick? This is going to be the first thing we talk about. So I got it up right here. It is Oscar Dominguez versus Omar El Shaheen. It is a race to 100, winner break, magic rack, no early 10 balls. So I've never been a fan of that. I think, well, we can talk about that in a second. But $40,000 in the middle. It is being streamed by Aaron's Pool Parlor. It is going to be free day one. And it is going to be $20 the last 2 days, for the last 2 days. And I guess for full disclosure, Aaron – from Aaron's Pool Parlor is a really good friend of mine. He's one of the biggest supporters I have of the work that I've done here. And he's been working towards getting a big matchup for a while now. And I've tried to steer him away from the pay-per-view because I personally think that this sport isn't popular enough to have pay-per-view on it and segregate it out even more. We're trying to grow the game, not, profit off of the people that are already there. And I think that's a little bit of what pay-per-view does, but that's just my personal opinion. So I think this is a hybrid between what I suggested with him and I guess what the players wanted, because it's going to be 1 day free, 2 day for $20. And then 80% of that money is actually going towards the players. So if you buy the stream for $20, $16 goes straight to Omar and Oscar. Pretty awesome. Help them out. Of course, we got to get the players some jelly for playing these matches and giving us something to watch. And then on top of that, they are going to be – so let's talk about the specs of the match. Besides that, they are going to be wearing heart monitors during this. And they have – if you've never seen Aaron's Pool Parlor, I highly, highly, highly suggest you check out some of their videos. They are doing some revolutionary things in pool. I just put the link for it out on the stream right now, so you can check that out. They are basically – so they have like 27 different camera angles. They have – a heart monitor set up. They have speed guns on the break. I mean, they do everything that you could possibly do for an amateur streaming company. It is absolutely sick. And I see, Mike, you're kind of nodding your head along with it. So I'm assuming you've watched some of their stuff in the past.
Yeah, the quality of the video is great. They let me know about the heart monitor, which I enjoy. I think we've seen a little bit of it. On the Euro Tour before, it adds a little, it adds a little bit of excitement to see, like, if a player's heart is racing when he's at the shot, or if he's racing as his opponent's getting out and he's sitting his ass in the chair, right? So I think it brings a different dynamic to the game. We've seen it in poker before, so I'm excited to go and see it. And yeah, I mean, I think, aren't you doing the commentary, Nate?
I am.
Are you?
I don't know. I know that he's asked me to do commentary with him in the past. If he asked me, I will not be held responsible for anything I agree to while drinking. So we'll start with there.
I could have sworn I had seen somewhere where I thought I had seen that you were doing. Maybe I'm mistaken, but
it's possible.
Job. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
and I can
possible.
Tell you guys just from talking with Oscar that I think more of that money is going to Omar than Oscar, because Omar's got expenses and all that, and pretty much playing at his house. So that's the kind of guy that Oscar Dominguez is. And he'll, win or lose, he's going to chew well. So, but yeah, I'm pumped, man. What about you guys? What do you think, Rob?
Now that you've told me what you have about Oscar's pre-game practice and dedication and stuff like that, I was definitely going to favor Omar because of his posture during the last championship he almost won and very possibly could have. His demeanor, his pool playing, posture at the table, the look in his eye, that competitive spirit under those circumstances, I think was really fun for me to see. That it isn't just having some skill; it's being put in that position with that amount of pressure on you, and then being able to function and perform the way he did. I was very impressed with that. Not knowing much about him myself, I hadn't watched him play pool before. I was kind of on his side actually, you know, being not as well known as Alvin to me.
Rooting for the underdog.
And
sure.
I was kind of, in a way, rooting. Yeah, I root for the underdog. I always do. I always have. But the performance was noteworthy. And I have not watched Oscar play a lot of pool. I have in the past, years past, at certain events when he's been on that particular table playing. So it's not that I haven't seen him play. And I was impressed with his play also on those occasions. True professional pocket pool player. But I was going into this before I heard what you said about Oscar's preparation for this. Heavily favoring Omar being put on the spot. You know, you're on the spot. You got to perform here. I'm going to make this a little bit closer probably now, a little more competitive. I'm not going to go one or the other here.
Well, if you don't mind, Mike, jumping in, I guess. So when people – I get this question more than probably any other question is, hey, I have a huge matchup coming up this weekend, or I have a huge tournament coming up this weekend. How do you suggest that I prepare for it? And what I tell them is, if you're not good enough to win in this matchup or this tournament right now with 5 weeks to five days to prepare, you're not going to be good enough by the time that you get there, right? You can't just get 20% better in 5 days. So what I always suggest to people is practice just enough to where you feel that you're confident with your preparation going into it. You don't need to prepare more than that because you're not going to get better in 5 days. You're not going to get significantly better anyways. So what I see is people are preparing, expecting to get better going into the last 5-6 days of a tournament or even the last few days of a tournament. And what they end up doing is they end up getting discouraged because they don't feel like their game is improving enough going into that weekend. And then their confidence is down going into the tournament. And then they're just not able to perform very well. And then there's this big letdown where, oh, my God, I prepared harder than I've ever prepared for my entire life for this event. And, you know, it's just not good enough. And then they just leave the tournament feeling, you know, like they can't do it. Right. So what I always say is just feel good enough going into a tournament, knowing that the game that you've prepared for the last X amount of years of your life that got you to this moment, maximize what you can get of that. And that's really just comes down to confidence. So I guess I wanted to say that just basically going into what you're saying, Mike, you're saying that he's preparing like crazy. And now Oscar's a little bit different, right? Because Oscar was, maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but Oscar was, if he wasn't an 800 level player, he was dang near it for about a 2-year stretch of his career. So part of his practicing like a fiend is just getting back to where he was. Is that, do you agree with that, Mike?
Well, yeah. Oscar's not necessarily money. I mean, the money's great, but he can't turn it off. You cannot turn off that competitive itch. You can't turn off that want to be great when you've tasted it before, right? I remember seeing a video where a guy was saying that people go and chase the end result, but what you don't see is the preparation that got you the end result. That's the difference between the, you know, right? And I mean, I've heard it from Oscar. I've seen it from Oscar. He's taking it very seriously. It's when it comes to Oscar may have been an 800 player before, that doesn't mean anything today. Not to me anyway. No, you know, it's about what he's doing today, because today Omar's stock is rising, right? So Oscar has to make up for it because he has spent so many hours being a dad, being a pool room owner, right? That's taken away from, whereas Omar has just been a professional pool player and whatever businesses he has back home as well. But Omar's primary focus is in playing pool. So that there's a big, big, big difference. But where Omar may lack in maybe gambling experience compared to Oscar, he's got that pressure that's been on him the last, you know, since the world championships, right? Because you can't recreate that. But Oscar may have more in the grease per se of being gambling. But I don't know. It is a lot closer, I think. But between, just from a gambling perspective, people are going to be betting more on Omar, I think, just because of what they've seen lately from him. We haven't seen anything from Oscar as far as average fans' perspective of what is compared to Omar. You know.
Well, yeah. So that goes kind of back to the broader thing I was trying to talk about. Like, from what it sounds like, this is not Oscar basically preparing for a week for a tournament, practicing his butt off and expecting to get significantly better. It sounds like he's been preparing for a couple of months, and that throws a wild card into it, because at Oscar's best, Oscar is probably right around where Omar is now, I would guess. Omar's a really good player. I mean, he's been a really good player for a lot of years. I mean, the World Championship this year, finals, that was basically just, you know, that for a lot of people, including yourself, Rob, that was a, hey, this guy's a real player. But for the people who follow the game for a lot of years, Omar had that in him. I mean, Omar was that level of player for a while now. That just kind of made – that was kind of his coming out party. I mean, he really is a top player and has been for about a year of pool now. So really what I'm getting at here is – is Oscar going to be able to prepare you, or is Oscar going to be able to get himself back to where he was in his prime by working harder than he's ever worked, which is what it sounds like he's doing, Mike? Is that going to get him to where he needs to be? I don't exactly know, but I think it's an interesting thought. Is that going to get him where he needs to be? Because I think even you said in the beginning, I think you said in the beginning that Oscar's up against it when they announced this about, 3 months ago or 2 months ago or something like that. You kind of said that he was really going to be up against it, Mike. And now you kind of sound like you believe in the practice and the preparation he's putting in.
Well, I mean, part of it is I love busting my boys' balls online, right? But, like, what jokes I make when crap out him online, because I do. I enjoy but he's a really good friend. But, like, when it comes to my actual opinion on it, I do think it's closer. I tell you, go talk to him. He don't think he's a dog at all. Not even a bit. Oscar told me a funny stat the other day. He was like, the last time me and Omar played, Omar had gotten, I think, to the quarters, I think, of the World Championships. That last time they played a couple of years ago. So, but a Qatar World Championship and a Matchroom World Championship are two completely different pressures. Completely different. But Omar only really had that kind of pressure his last match, because he really wasn't on the TV table. I think he had played one match maybe prior to the championship. But my point is he didn't really have that full Matchroom experience until the end, because he wasn't on the stage, you know, the entire time. He was playing in the back, you know. So I'm curious to see how they both come out. The break is obviously going to be I think it's going to be very close. I don't think it'll be a bunch of like big swings where someone's going to be up by 12 and then lose it. I think whoever gets ahead is just going to be, you know, steady's going to go and win that race. But you know, the last time we saw Oscar, and it was an exhibition, but it wasn't at his home room, he was head to head with Fedor like maybe through 10 games.
8-2.
And I know that's a
he had him down 8-2.
Right, there you go. Yeah.
Unfortunately, he lost 15-8.
Yeah,
I was commentating. He was up 8-2, and he lost 15-8. But but he was there, right? I mean,
against
Fedor, when Fedor was playing top,
four in the world, right?
Three or four, yeah.
You know, so Oscar ain't afraid of anybody. You know, no person's gonna go and scare Oscar. I can promise you that, and he's gonna be ready.
So I actually think Tracy's question was pretty good, and we'll throw it up on screen here. Mike, what do you think the over-under on the heart monitor is going to be?
I don't – listen, if I had a reference to go in, and I probably should watch a Kazoom match or something to go and see, I don't know. But I'm excited, man. I want to see it. That's a fun – like, the more you can get people to, like, be engaged on the stream, I'm all for it. I want to see someone – like, Oscar said something, and, you know, I don't want to – curse anymore than I usually do, but that's exactly what Oscar said. Oscar said, yes. "You're gonna watch me go and shit my pants on."
I've actually never seen
Pinball or something.
Yeah. Well, sure. I always love this because, like, it just goes to show that even if you're the best. So, another question I get a lot is, how do you control your nerves in the biggest moments? And what I tell you is, the moment you figure it out, write a book, because it's going to make millions, right? People think that once you get to being a 700 level player or a 800 level player, or you become the number one player in the world, that you just stop getting nervous. And if you throw one of these heart monitors on, when Oscar was playing on a one pocket tournament, he's playing one pocket, which is a pretty relaxed game. It's significantly more slow paced. You would think that your nerves would calm down a little bit playing a slower paced game. And he was up in the 130s. That's like sprinting for like 60 seconds, kind of like fast heart rate. Even the best players in the world get crazy nervous.
Put a heart monitor on Kazakis in Europe, in the Moscone Cup, all right? Put a heart monitor on him, and you'll see how elite players. Well, no, I don't want to put quotes because Alex is an elite player, but see how much nerves really go and play a factor.
You don't think Alex is an elite player?
No, he is. I that's why I said no. Take back off those quotes.
Oh, Alex, okay.
Yeah.
I think he is too, but Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, well,
what do you think the over under is? See, so you can, well, I'm not letting you off the hook, Mike. You're giving me an over under on a number.
Well, if it was me, I would just double my blood pressure meds. So. that's how I'd handle it. But this question is a very good question. And I asked a professional pool player one time at a tournament. I was having dinner with Joe Balsas, who was a world champion straight pool player at one time. And I asked him, I said, Joe, you know, you're under a lot of pressure. You just ran 120. You haven't made a ball yet. It's to 150, so you pretty much figure you got to run out. What do you got to get nervous? I said, what do you do about that? How do you particularly deal with it? And his answer to me was, well, you know, a lot of guys have a little half pint in their jacket, sport jacket. No, you know, they'll turn around, go over, and they'll take a little nip and stuff. And other guys do other things too. He says, me, I just sweat blood. And when I heard that, I related to it because he dealt with that moment that you need, the 150th ball, okay, or 626 or whatever it is, that one last ball.
Yeah, I would have loved to see a heart monitor on John Schmidt at about 525.
Yeah. What do you do? So.
No kidding.
Player has their own
170, personal, 180.
Very personal way to control. Now, can you let that heart rate go up and control it when it's high? I think that's fire. That's steam, as long as you control it, as long as your stroke stays smooth, even though you're racing inside.
You
on the outside, get control of what's smooth and that. And I like Oscar for that also. I like Omar for it, and I like Oscar for that. Simply his history, Oscar's history, like you said, Mike. You got to like both players for being able to moment. But the most recent moment is with Omar. So yeah, I'm going to favor him in the outcome. The over and under on the heart rate thing,
I think you're going to see like more layers to players, you know, because you may go and have someone who's really stoic like Akachi, but you don't know what he's going through in here, right? You may have someone like Alba.
Same with Oscar. Oscar's pretty stoic.
Yeah. I mean, but even like Alvin can be a firecracker sometimes, but then other times he can just be like this. I remember talking with Fedor after he won his world championship, and I sent him a message, and I was like, "Congratulations!" And I said, "Man, you really held it together really well." And he was like, "Mike, I was nervous as hell." But you didn't. But he didn't show it, right? But imagine if we had that heart monitor, everybody would know, right? Because you can't go in and away from it. So I'm all for it. And I, to me, that much more of a fan if I'm seeing someone just racing through the roof and still execute, right?
And executing, using that adrenaline, using that heart pumping stuff to your advantage. Concentrate more because of that. No, you can turn nervousness into your advantage in pool.
Yeah, a
there's
lot
ways
of
to do it. You can use little tricks to do that.
Even the best players, man, I remember during the Matchroom event, even Shane had said on the stream whenever he was playing, when he missed the ball, he even mumbled under his breath, he's like, I'm hitting it like I'm scared," or something to that effect.
There you
and
go.
And Shane is Shane, right?
I was just going to say that. One of the methods to deal with this blood pressure thing going up and the nervousness and everything else, if you speak to yourself in pictures out loud, your brain gets it. And it will do what you want it to physically.
Yep.
If you talk to yourself out loud, that's a manageable situation. And you do see that on site in these tournaments when these players all of a sudden they'll mumble something to themselves and it'll change their whole game.
It's the Randy Lamar.
If you hear yourself say something, you get it.
It's the Randy Lamar, Rob.
There you go.
Yeah. Something so has to go in and click, man. And how many times have you seen a player who's been like the one getting right there but never getting over the top? And then once they get over the top, the dam bursts. And they start snapping off every other event or going on a massive tear. And it's not because of their ability, because their ability is the same. Yeah. It's whenever they execute in those crunch moments, man. You know, and
When Sky and Dennis played, Mike, when Sky and Dennis played, that's what I felt Sky had that entire match. He had it. He had that.
What do you mean?
Going. Sky, that mental. Whatever the stress level was, he was in total control of it.
Like to process it, right? I'll co-sign on that 1,000% because I'm sitting there and nobody can watch it on the stream. I'm sitting there and Sky ain't got a care in the world as Dennis not only chopped down that lead, but when it went up 5, went up 8, went up 9, and Sky's just sitting there with the same disposition, still smiling, talking, sitting there drinking his. You don't, and then as soon as he gets up, and I'm thinking, man, the kid's buried. Like, how do you, you got Dennis that already gone and not only came back, but now he's up on you and that much now. And Sky just gets up and his eyes, man, you just saw it in his eyes. Like, they just changed from not caring.
And he turns into a killer.
Not caring to where, yeah, exactly right. He turned into a killer and you saw it on his face, man. You can't make that up. Either you got it or you don't, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty hard to fake that.
You put talent like that and you give it some fire in its belly and then just watch it go.
Yeah. So I got to agree with Ryan Harmson. I threw this up on the – I always get more nervous watching other people than I do playing myself. So when we're playing in the finals of the VNEA Masters for our team, I'm watching my teammates and I'm like nervous, like my heart just pumping out of my chest. And then someone's like, Nate, it's your game. So I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And I can instantly feel my heart just, like, calm down. And I probably go from, like, 140 to, like 120 before I play. It's weird. But so if I had to put the over-under on the 140 beats per minute for the heart monitor, you taking the over or under, Mike?
Man, I don't know. I need some can I shelve it until next week? Because I just need a frame of reference. My gut tells me to take the under, but I don't know if that's like super high or really low. Maybe I'm just dumb like that. I don't know.
Well, I remember for the one pocket, I think the highest I ever saw Oscar get up to was like 134. But that's one pocket. So I feel like it's got to be a little bit higher.
I'd say, well, then I guess I'm going to stick with the under. Yeah, I'm going to stick with the under.
All right,
we'll bet lunch or something.
All right, lunch.
Okay, 10 push-ups.
10 push-ups?
We'll do that too, whatever. Yeah.
All right, we'll do 10 push-ups on the over-under at 140.
I'll go under, but you have to cut the push-ups down to 5.
You can do them from your knees.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. So I guess let's give our predictions. What do you think, Mike? We'll start with you since Oscar's your boy and you can crap on him right now. What's your prediction?
Experience goes a long way for me, and experience gambling and experience in a tournament, two different things. I'm going with Oscar. I think it's going to be close, but I'm going to go 100 to 89, Oscar.
Rob, what you got?
I am going to go Omar, 100 to 92.
Close.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be close.
I think I've gotten now, I think I'm like 13 that I've gotten of these wrong in a row. So that's pretty impressive. I got to keep my streak going. So I'm going to keep that streak going by picking Omar 100 to 86. There we go.
All right.
Tracy I'm says excited. A bottle of Fireball on the under. Oh no. all right, let's, so I think this is good. Before we move on, I think this is a pretty sweet question that we could tackle here. This is from Lil Chris. With the Olympics going on right now, the surge of pool being in the Olympics has been a trending topic again. What are our thoughts? Does anybody want to go first on this? All right, then I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead, Nate.
All right. Go ahead, Nate.
So my initial thought is absolutely not. And it's absolutely not because there's no organization in this sport. Now, do I think that there's a Q sport that does deserve it? Absolutely. I think snooker probably should be an Olympic. Why wouldn't snooker be? I mean, the only thing that you could start saying is, all right, well, that's pretty much just a regional thing. It's played in South Africa. It's played in the UK. It's played in India. It's played a little bit in China. It's not played at all in the US. So, you know, you can start saying, well, it's kind of but then so is basketball, right? So is, and so is baseball. There's a lot of things that are like that. I think that snooker does belong in the Olympics because there's an actual infrastructure in place where there is a pool school, there is a snooker school, so you can't even get onto the tour without actually being a certified card-holding pro. I think there's infrastructure in place for that. There's plenty of tours. There's prestigious events. I could see snooker getting in. Pool, we're a long ways away from where I think pool deserves to be on there. Now you can start arguing, well, breakdancing shouldn't be either. And I'd be like, okay, that's fine. But we can't point at the things that shouldn't be there and say, well, see, this is slightly better than that. They both suck as far as, you know, people's interest in them, but this should be here. And that just doesn't fly with me as an argument. I think snooker belongs in there or certainly can make an argument for belonging in there. And pool is a ways out yet, but it's heading in the right direction. Matchroom, Predator, with the, we're going to talk about a little bit later, creating their tour. You know, the infrastructure is getting in place. And I think at some point in time soon, I could justify saying that pool belongs, but not right now. Rob, what do you think?
I had this conversation 50 years ago with pool playing friends about the Olympics and about pool. And, we all said at that time, we'll probably never see it in our lifetime in the Olympics. And what happens with the Olympics, you have degrees of winning based on how far, how high, how fast, how tricky, how there's always a how that you reach for. And the winner of any events is the best at that. Where pool is just really not that kind of sport. Do they have bowling in the Olympics?
No.
Is there Olympic bowling? See, so you there's, I mean, there's certain golf, sports out there.
I would say that golf is the closest. So, of course, the Olympics started as like things that you could do basically that are survival based, right? Running is survival based, jumping is survival based. All of the things that they used to, you know, it started in Greece back in, you know, 200 AD or whatever it was. I don't know the history of when it started, but the idea is they were always survival based. Who is the best at doing these survival based things? Running, jumping, swimming, all of the things that you have to do as a human to survive. And I would say the last like 50 to 100 years, we're starting to get into games that have zero to do with survival, right? Golf is a good example. But even like archery and stuff like that, shooting, those are all survival-based skills. And the Olympics has always kind of been that, right? Breakdancing, even breakdancing, I would say that kind of, in a sense, is, you know, we've been dancing as a race since 50 billion years ago. That's always something that, so you can make an argument for that, for breakdancing, because it's an actual form of communication in a lot of different ways. But I think the idea is, in the last 50 years, especially with golf getting in there, that has absolutely basically nothing to do with it, right? That's just a swinging a club at a ball. I think the fact that golf gets in gives pool some hope, but we'll see.
Shooting for a low score in golf. So the score itself is a predictor if you're going to get a medal or not. If you had a thing with pool in the Olympics, you're saying, how fast can you run 100 balls? There you go. There's your medal. This guy ran it in an hour and 20 minutes. This guy ran 100 balls in 35 minutes. Your medal for second and third. So, you know, you'd have to put some type of a parameter on pool could judge the type of medal you get. Yeah. Winning a double elimination tournament, come on. There's probably 20 guys in every tournament that could do that. You know what I mean? Win it. Actually come out on top. Especially nowadays with the caliber of players there are and the amount of players that are that good. You could make a great draw, not be the best player by any means at all, and double dip the guy because you've just been on three different tables playing for 7 hours and you are on fire. And this guy that sat for six hours, he doesn't even know what a stick feels like anymore.
Yeah, but now you're talking about the format of what would exist in the Olympics. But we need to talk as to whether or not it even should belong there before we even talk about formats, because I don't think it belongs here regardless of the format. But, Mike, what do you think?
I could not disagree with you more, Nate. I 1,000% think that pool should be an Olympic sport. I think that it's unfair to rob these guys of an opportunity to go and represent their country on the biggest stage. I think that pool players in general have to go and get together to be more professional, because there's a lot of guys who aren't professional. And I'm saying it from a character standpoint than anything else. But there's also a lot of guys who are trying and starting to now go and represent the right way, you know. I don't know. The closest you go and get is something like the SEA games, which happen in Asia every year. Go and ask Carlo how much that event meant him personally and to his career, and that'll give you kind of a feel. Way back, I think maybe like 8 years ago or so, they used to have the World Games, where it was a five man with a whole bunch of different disciplines, singles, doubles, Scotch triple, Scotch five on five, I mean you name it, and it was in China every year. That was fantastic to go and watch. I don't know, man.
You're making an argument for the players themselves, right? But the idea is, so of course it would be incredibly humbling, I'm sure. It would be a huge honor to be able to represent Germany for Joshua Filler and Shane for the U.S. and Carlo Beato but that doesn't change the fact that it doesn't belong there, right? Does the world need to – now, you can make the argument, I would say, that pool is more global than snooker, but I think it's hard to justify that.
Pool's more global than snooker. I think snooker is more global than it than both of them, you know?
Well, I think it's more popular. I would just say most of the top players come from about four countries in snooker. And most of the top players come from 50 countries in pool, right? Yeah. I mean, you can look across Europe and you can point to every single country and there's a top player that you cannot make a top. You know, if you took the top 100 snooker players, I'm guessing that 80 of them, if not more, would be from three countries. And if you made the top 100 list in pool and you took all the amount of countries, it'd probably be 50 or 60 different countries.
You take the same with three cushion. Well, that's 50, 60 countries.
all those guys in the world championships are going and playing behind a flag. You know, I mean, they're not waving it as they're walking through, but it's on their, like, on you score or whatever, you know,
yeah.
Even down to the ROC for Fedor. I mean, you know, like they get a lot more fans and a lot more cheering for representing their country. And I'm biased, right? Number one, I love the sport. And two, I'm friends with a lot of guys and I want to see more opportunities for them. So I'm not speaking from just a fan of general sports, right? I'm talking as someone who's got a passion for the game. But I think that it does make it tough. And the biggest reason why is because there's so many different rules, number one, right? There's no, in snooker, there's no different way to rack or different size table or different size pockets, different kinds of balls. We don't have that in that game. So things have to get a lot more standardized for sure. But I do hope we get a seat in our lifetime. I'd love to go and see it. Personally,
yeah. I mean, I would love to see it too. I can't say that Poole deserves it with what they have in place currently, with the infrastructure that exists in Poole today. I just can't see how I can justify saying that Poole deserves it as a sport. We're not the people that are involved in it, because I would love to be able to see Sky go out there and you know, represent his country, and I would love to see Fedor represent Russia. And I think it'd be fantastically entertaining, because like I said, I mean, I could go down the top 100 list in Fargo, and there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 different countries are represented in the top 20 players on the Fargo. And the Fargo list is just a nice little, but there's 13 countries represented out of the top 20. Now we go down another 20, there might be another 13 in there. The point is well, it would be fantastic to see all these countries like represented by the, like, it would be a fantastic event. I just don't think the way that we've built Poole currently today, I don't think it deserves it.
If we can't get it, then let's bring in the Philippines and China in the Moscone Cup, yeah, and let's, right, open up and let's have more World Cup of Poole. Right, come on, Matchroom. I want to see more of it, because exactly, it's exciting. It's super exciting. Yes, it, so,
hell yeah! You could have, yeah, you could absolutely build a replicated. You could build a replicated Olympics version of what it could be, and just allow two players from every single country, like the World Cup of Pool, from 80 countries, and just let them fight it out. Right, like just singles, of course, but like that's what they would do for the Olympics. Just bring in 80 to 120 countries, whatever you wanted to do. Let the countries represent themselves, and you know, the countries can decide two players, and Matchroom can stream the entire event and, you know, give it out. I mean, that would be you can't tell me that wouldn't make crazy amounts of money. I mean, they'd have to build it, they'd have to invest in it, but you can't tell me that would not be a huge cash cow. That would be amazing. Yeah.
It'd be brutal on sleep here in the US, because I'd have to get up at like 5 a.m. every morning, but hey, I'm game. Let's do it. I'm in. Yeah.
I think it'd be fantastic. I think it's a cool idea. And I would love to see snooker get in the next, you know, if snooker could get in the next 5 years, I think Poole could, you know, maybe, you know, Rob, you're 145 years old at this point, but you know, maybe if you made it to 190, you'd be able to see it.
Yeah. At the time the conversation was being had, when I was a young man, we were all for it, of course, at that time. The people I was associating with, we wanted to see, you know, back in the 60s, we wanted to see Poole being played in the Olympics on a big stage. Where, yes, can you imagine representing your country on a pool table? I mean, really, there wouldn't be any more outrageously important thing in your life happen ever to you. Stand on a stage and put a gold medal around yourself for the United States of America because you're a pool player. Oh, my Lord.
The national anthem pumping in the background. Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Oh. I mean, and you know, and I think if it was an accepted Olympic sport, and that would elevate the game itself in the United States and in all kinds of other countries. The problem is the elevation of the game isn't high enough. That would make it high enough.
I think to be fair, I don't think you just get onto the Olympics as a sport by by luck. Like I think I saw.
Well, how did curling get on as the Winter Olympics?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is I read an article. Yeah, curling, I read an article.
A lot of money.
Yeah, I know, Rob. But like I read an article the other day that said as far as like black money and undisclosed money and like just the disappearing of money, the Olympics Committee is by far and away the most corrupt system in the world. We're talking about business, sports, politics, religion. It is by far the most corrupt entity in the entire world. So the idea is you're not, I don't think you're going to get involved with the Olympics by saying, hey, maybe we should look at pool. You're going to have somebody in the background kind of like, hey, here's $50 million. Why don't you get us over into that little game going on right there? And there's nobody in the pool world that has that kind of sway. I mean,
out in New York that put on $1 million three cushion tournament and had
The point is that guy can't even get a meeting with these people, right? The point is there has to be some sort of powerful entity in place that can actually have the cachet to go to them and say, hey, this is our organization. This is what we're trying to do. Here, have a little money under the table, and why don't you at least consider us, right? There's nobody in pool that could even talk to them. There's nobody that would even get a meeting with the Olympics Committee in the pool world because there's nothing there. I mean, there's really no entity that has the kind of cachet to justify even lobbying to get it in there, right?
Well, Nate, stop it, Rob.
Stop this right now. Mike, what do you think? Don't even start getting me involved in this.
I know. Wait. You're the Hall of Fame guy. No, you're picking. Oh, you're the perfect person for this. Nice cup.
Yeah, Nate, you on board. Nice. We ain't got a bad game. I mean, come on. Ship it.
Ship it.
No, I mean, well, Mike, what did you have anything to expand upon there?
No, I mean, I think that it's going to take time, but I think there's got to be, we got to have conversations. It's got to build a buzz. We got to have lobbying going on. Like I know there was a few guys that went over to Europe. I think Florian was amongst that crew for the 2024 games. So, you know, we just got to have, let's continue to make it a point of conversation so that way it stays relevant and we at least got a swing. You know, just give us a damn swing. Even if they go and vote no, well, hell, at least we were on the vote to begin with. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. You know? To get to that point, if a Q Sport, I think, gets to the point where they're getting voted on, it's hard to justify. I mean, if you really take a look at pool and what it could offer, it's hard to justify it not being there. Because like I said, I mean, there's 13 countries in the top 20 player in the world. Name me anything out there, any other sport that is happening on the Olympics, both winter or summer. Any sport where that's the case, where 13 countries are represented in the top 20 players. That is like Olympics perfection. That's exactly what they want. They want every single country to have a top player at the top so that they could potentially be in the swing for a gold medal. Pool is the perfect representation of that. It really is. I mean,
I think you could combine like pool and arm wrestling, something like that.
Just start throwing swings right in the middle of it. We'll be all right.
Get out of here, Rob. so just, I mean, just looking through the next 20, just out of curiosity, there's one, two, three, four. God, there's a lot of China in here. Six. There's seven more countries represented. So there's in the top 40, there are 20 different countries represented. That's pretty strong. I mean, granted, it's not as deep maybe as a golf field, but even golf doesn't have that level of depth. I mean, golf is dominated by the U.S., Australia, the U.K., and for some reason, a lot of the Norwegian countries. I don't get that. But in South Africa, I mean, there's like five countries that probably have 80 of the, you know, probably 90 of the top 100 golfers in the world, I would guess.
But you can say that in any sports, though, and that's where you end up having Cinderella stories. So, I mean, you can have guys who come in
yeah.
chalk favorite. I mean, look at the USA in basketball recently where they're like a 30-point favorite and lose outright, you know, or whatever it is. Like, you won't ever get – if it was all chalk throughout, then you would never have great moments of sport, period, you know?
Well, that's why I think the pool is such a perfect Olympic sport, because that's not the case here.
Yeah. You don't got to be the biggest or the fastest, right? Because you can have a guy who's huge and a guy who's little and give me the little Filipino, you know? So
yeah, who couldn't see somebody like a Ulysses Yap win the Olympics? He absolutely could win
for
it.
Sure.
Yeah, he's at. Mm-hmm. I mean, tell me right now that a player like even Ralph Souquet couldn't win it, right?
Sure.
Sanjin, well, I don't think he could win it.
Darren right Appleton, now,
Mario Heed, Darren Appleton. I mean, there's a lot of different countries that could go and win that. And
oh yeah.
I think it's perfect for the Olympics, but all right. Well, I think we had a pretty long discussion on that one. Let's move on. I think I wanted to talk a little bit about the Predator US One tour that's starting up. I think it actually starts today in Arizona, and they're kind of. I think there's seven of these total. There's one in Michigan, the US, Michigan, Arizona, Las Vegas. Let's see here. Mike's going to take a step away for just a second here. I think that, well, I guess let me just pull it up so I can actually just see it. So take a little break while Mike has to go run and do something anyways right now. So.
Yeah, I like Matthew Lester. Sorry. Here makes a comment. Snooker used to be in the Paralympics until 1988. So there was it's been in the conversation. Yeah. About the Olympics for years. So
yeah, maybe Matt Lester. Do you know why it was? I was wondering why it was taken out. And then there's another comment in here.
Wonder that also when I read that.
We've talked about this several times. What happened to the pool in the ESPN days? What happened to the pool in the ESPN days was basically the infrastructure and pool fell apart. And when you don't have, you know, ESPN isn't going to organize anything. ESPN does not organize football. It does not organize basketball. It does not organize baseball, hockey, cornhole. It organizes nothing. All ESPN is a platform to air what you already have and get it out there to the masses using their platform. They are nothing more than like a Netflix, for example. So when the infrastructure and pool fell apart, the men's tour stopped right around then. The women continued going on because they had the WPBA that continued on into the early 2000s, maybe around 2007 or 2008. I think it stopped, but the idea is if there's nobody to go to ESPN and say, hey, here's 90 hours worth of content, air this on your stream or air this on your platform, they're not going to go out and search for it by themselves. And there's still to this day, there's nobody in the US at least that can go to ESPN and say, hey, here's 120 hours of content, stream this on Sunday mornings, right? There's nobody in the US that can do that. Now Matchroom can, but they have a deal with Sky Sports. And DAZN. So why would they want to use ESPN when they already have deals set up? So and Cornhole actually has an organization. It's the ACS, I think, American Cornhole Society or something like that. I think whatever, I don't know what the S is,
do they really?
But it's ACS. They have an actual professional cornhole league. I'm pretty sure it's the ACS, and it stands for American Cornhole something. I don't know what it is, but that's why ESPN is not on pool. Matthew Lesner says that there was only four players playing in the event, and all from the UK. So maybe why?
Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and here's 8-Ball and says, America needs a real pro tour like Europe and stay away from 7-foot tables. I can't agree with that more. The 7-foot table, I don't think that the 7-foot table has to get demonized like it does. I just think that we should not be running pro events on it. And once you get to a certain level in the game, you should realize that this is not a table for you anymore. And if you want to do something with your career, get off of them and learn how to play on a big table. I think it's great for amateurs, though. It gives amateurs interest and a chance to pot a ball, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's good when you're old too, because the
pro players still have to go and make a living. You know, it's tough.
Oh, absolutely. No, I get that.
Yeah.
And if there was more infrastructure in place, If there was more of an infrastructure in place in pool, and there was a pro tour that happened every single weekend, like, you know, the FedEx Cup, or, you know, all these WebMDs, or the web, yeah, WebMD.com, the golf tours, there's a couple different golfers. If there was one of those every single weekend, like there is in golf, I'd have to worry about going to the Midwest. Well, the Midwest Expo had big tables, but like, you know, maybe like a, what is that? Like a Music City Open where you got to play on bar tables for an event. So, Tracy says ACL is the cornhole. So yeah, so American Cornhole League. So yeah, they actually have a real professional tour with a professional list of players and blah, blah, blah. Pool doesn't have that. So, and the same thing that Keith David just said, there needs to be more big sponsors in pool. Well, there's not going to be big sponsors in pool if you don't have an actual professional league to get all these things.
Everything has to be clicking on right, so on the right cylinders. And I think at the end of the day, Matchroom's starting to get everyone's shit together and keep everybody in line. And
I think that's,
you know,
right.
Everybody
right
has there. To be click. You know, everybody has to be on the exact same page, you know. So, but there has to be accountability, whether it's the players giving feedback or someone like a Matchroom who is not a governing body, but to go and hold players accountable with certain things. Everything has to be working to go and achieve the same goal. But if someone's just dragging their feet, then, you know, it's going to be just that much tougher for everybody.
Yeah, you see it in amateur pool. You know, all these – there's tons of amateur leagues that have thousands and thousands of members.
Yeah, and their primary – unfortunately, their primary job is to turn a profit, not to build the game.
I hear you. Yeah.
So,
but still, I mean, yeah.
We can see in the U.S., I mean, there's like you said, there's probably 13 different national championships that are won by VNEA, BCAPL, TAP, APA. I mean, you can name 20 of them off the top of your head, and each one of them has a national championship and are national champions, right? So the idea is if you have 20 different people that you're competing against, 20 different leagues that you're competing against, all you're doing is competing for players. And if you're competing for players, you're competing for profits. And that's, you're not building the game, right? The ACL is one organization. They do not have competition. The NBA does not have competition. The NFL does not have competition. So you get to spend all of this time basically just building the game in your clientele list, as opposed to competing against your competitors and trying to fight for, you know, your little piece of the pie.
Yeah,
it's a bad thing.
American bowling, you might have a million leagues in the country, bowling leagues, but there's one American Bowling Congress. That's it.
Yeah.
Governs every single bowling league in that country. Not two or three or four or ten, but one. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's weird that way. What happened to it? Why did that go like that?
So we talked about American tours, and here's Ed Ladawi right on time to
people have to work together, I mean, right?
Yeah. So I think so we are going to start this out by talking about the Predator USA tour that they are starting up. I think it's seven events. They're basically mixing up with different state tournaments. So I think the state tournament for Michigan, Arizona, I think they have one in Maryland, if I'm not mistaken. The idea is they're trying to create an actual U.S. professional tour. Ed Ladawi with the NBL is doing the same exact thing. It is not a tour for amateurs. I mean, there's a way for amateurs to get into it, but it's more like a farm system for amateurs into the professional levels, as opposed to the professional tour. I guess it's not really an amateur tour.
I mean,
it's just not.
I say you can play if you're an amateur.
It's a farm
and a predator
system.
Camel beer companies,
and you can for the NBL as well. But the idea, I think, and maybe Ed can correct me if I don't want to talk for him, but I think the idea is he's trying to create a farm system that helps you really become a professional player.
But there's
that doesn't
a plateau
right
now.
If
you're above a certain number Fargo, then you're by their standard, you know, considered a pro, right? If I'm not mistaken.
20. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. But the idea is I think with the amateur events, so those are for the amateur events. There's for every national event, there's two amateur events. And the two amateur events basically gives you one representative from each one of them to compete against the 720 plus professionals at a national level for the, you know, the prize pool of $200,000. But the idea is it's allowing you to get into the box. It's taking the top amateurs from each region and throwing them into the box against the best players in the country and, you know, really helping them to, I guess, get that experience, that motivation to get into that next level. So the NBL is a great thing that's starting up. Hopefully it works well. This US One Tour by Predator, I mean, it seems there's a lot of money added. I think all in all, I think there's about 10,000 to each one. I think the Puerto Rico Open is the most with 25,000.
I think that one's 50 and the other ones are 25, I'm not mistaken. But I just want to say if there's one company trying their damnedest and not just trying in the sense of just hearing themselves talk, but in the sense of putting their money where their mouth is, it's Predator. Because not only are they working with Matchroom, they're working with CSI, they're adding a quarter million or whatever, I think it's a quarter million to this tour. We don't know the financials as far as what they've offered to Matchroom and given to Matchroom for being a sponsor for all their events, and not just one of the sponsors, like the main sponsor. So they're putting their money where their mouth is.
Every single one of the virtual events that I did was sponsored by Predator, and that was not cheap. They did very, very, they took care of me extremely well too. So they're even taking care of like the smaller guys too. They're not just pushing the top end. They're pushing every level of the industry.
Yeah. I mean, you can give them shit for whatever reason, but you can't go and knock them for their lack of effort and for them going and giving back to the game. So that deserves respect. I mean, no disrespect to other companies. I mean, I don't see a bunch of big Q companies going and sponsoring stuff like that all the way across the board, you know? And if not, then they need to go and learn how to work together to maybe add more money to the pot for pro players, you know? But you constantly see their name everywhere, and that has to get recognized for me.
The best shaft I had ever played with, ever, at one point in time, was the Predator 314. Shaft by far the best.
Yeah, I would say so Ed Ladawi said Predator does a lot, same as Simonis, Aramith, and Diamond. The only thing that I would say is Predator is innovating. Like Simonis, Aramith, and Diamond, they support the heck out of the industry too. They give back so much to a lot of different events,
for sure.
But I don't see them really innovating the sport and trying to grow it. I just see them putting their money behind other people who are doing it. And that's fine. I mean, that is extremely, extremely generous, and they're really doing their part. But Predator is taking the initiative to grow it themselves. They're putting not only their resources behind it, they have the Arizona Open, Las Vegas Open, Michigan Open, Ohio Open, Puerto Rico Open, in respective 25, 25, 25, 25,000, 50,000 to the Puerto Rico Open, and then they're adding $100,000 to the Predator World 10 Ball.
This is after a year of COVID, man. You know, like this is after a year where everything was shut down and they're still putting their money where their mouth is.
Yeah.
Like they would have every excuse in the world to pull up and pull out, right? Because of everything going on how much that's affected their bottom line, but they're still doing it. You know, that's pretty strong for me.
Yeah, I think and we got Ed Ladawi here, so I mean, I do want to give him a pump because I really like what he's doing too. He has not started his league. In fact, COVID has like damn near ripped his league apart. And if it's not going to be from a lot of hard work to keep it going on his end, on life support, basically, the NBL may or may not ever see, you know, its actual first national event, which I think we're hoping for the end of the year still. If I'm not mistaken, Ed, you can talk to us there, but. I think it would be awesome to see a couple of professional tours start up at the same time. And, you know, hopefully one of them make it, if not all of them make it. And we could start building up some actual content and some real organization at the top level of this game, to where we can go to ESPN later on or the Olympics committee and say, hey, we're not just a bunch of, you know, chickens running around with their heads cut off over here. We're a real organized body with a real organized sport, and we're doing real things in this game. And because of that, here, this is what we've created. Help us get it out there and help us grow it even more. And we can go to ESPN or the Olympics committee and do stuff like that. But it's not going to work. It's just not going to work unless we actually have some level of organization with some real adults at the top running the sport.
No, that and the coordinating, man. Together we can do it.
Yeah.
But not, you know, not everyone's their own race. We all got to run it
together.
Well,
we'll do our part here on this podcast.
Yeah, well, let's not get carried away, Rob.
Come on. Give me a break. You're the
editor. Nate's really just trying to promote cornhole, man. I think
you're going to hire a new line. Actor or what? You ain't going to get anybody to work for what I do.
I'm practicing my cornhole.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, comments I'm reading. God, we got cornhole on TV every week, and we see pool matches once a month, maybe.
I'll tell you what, man. Last weekend, in our reception, we had cornhole, darts, and bags in a bar Olympics, and my team won the cornhole and the darts, and we got double dipped in the finals of the pool. So, I think that's everything I needed to know. I'm taking up darts, and I'm taking up cornhole, baby.
I think that's everything we need to know, Nate, more importantly.
No, I mean, I hope the Predator is able to make this work out for them. I hope they find a way to make it profitable so that they're not, you know, eating money every time they run one of these things. I hope Ed Ladawi is able to get this up and started. I know he's still out there. Ed, how many representatives do you have now? You're supposed to have 64. I know Wisconsin, I got you one, and we're running our second one August 14th. So we'll have our second representative out of Wisconsin. How many you got left to get the first national event started? And I guess with that, we can move on. We'll come back to that. I mean, unless you guys have anything else to say about anything that we just talked about.
No, I think you're good, buddy.
Okay. Well, let's move on. I don't really know a lot about the juniors, and I wish I did, but there's really not much to follow along with for the junior tour. I know that there's a couple starting up, and that's pretty good, and I hope those continue on as well. But I did want to say that the BEF is going on right now. It is the closest thing, I guess, we have to a national championship of the best of the best. It's worth watching. It is absolutely worth watching. It is being streamed for free by BBTV. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw that link out there right now as well. Yeah. You from this link right here, which I just threw out there. Yesterday was the first day. They're actually live right now. So that's pretty cool. Ricky Evans is playing Lucas Francisco Werner. So that should be actually a phenomenal match. Both of those players are
Lucas,
real strong.
My boy.
Yeah, Lucas is currently winning 5-4, so don't leave us yet because we're going to get sad if you leave us. But right when this is done, head over there and check out the juniors. The link is right there. I wanted to just, I guess, throw that out there so that you know, you guys were aware of it if you were not. And other than that, another thing based off of the juniors that I saw that was, you know, another person that's really stepping up and putting their money where their mouth is. I want you to talk about this one, Mike, so you can talk about the Tony Joanne.
Yeah, just a shout out to Tony and his boy John Baggs, who's a big time sports gambler out in Vegas. From my understanding, I don't know him personally, but I think he bought a couple $1,000s worth of cases from Omega Mike, Omega Billiards, Mike Wong, who is doing tons of things for the sport in his own right. I know Nate's had him on, but yeah, John Baggs and Tony, man, they went and Tony pretty much made a post and just said, hey, if you know any kid in need, you could use a case, hit him up. Let them know what's going on in your story. And there was nothing dangled over their head, or, you know, it's kind of like if you got issues going and supporting with gear, they were going to take care of you when it comes. And I love seeing stories like that. I love seeing guys like that. if you have a junior player, I know I've done it a couple times, not to Tony's level or John Bag, but if you have someone who needs something and maybe they can't afford it or maybe they're going through a tough time, you know, get with me or and we'll try to figure something out. You know, we'll try to find a way to get that kid something. So I'm just throwing that out there too. But yeah, mad props to Tony and them, man. It just I want to see the future of the game grow. I want to see kids in America go and play pool. And it's stuff like this that's going to go and help out. You know, it's a piece of the puzzle. So.
Yep.
Yeah,
No,
I can
absolutely
give
agree.
you kind of an example of what you run into when you try to do that kind of thing. In my hometown, I had a pool hall for a while, and I tried to get the school involved in having a class. You put it in the math department, you know. I'll teach you some systems on the pool table. And what happened as an end result of this was that the only school in the city that was even concerned or wanted to be involved in something like this for the students was the alternative school. This was the school for the students that couldn't be handled in regular classes. They said, yes, sure, we'll do that once a week. And what I saw was these students who were disengaged in a regular atmosphere of school, put in the pool hall atmosphere, learned real quick about the numbers in pool and how to play. That was just kind of foggy to me why the regular educational system we have in this country was contrary to kids learning something in a pool room. But the alternative school for the kids that couldn't be dealt with in the real school ate it up, and every minute of it, and some of them turned their lives around because of it. And that's just crazy to me. Why it wouldn't be more accepted. You got in Korea, you have the educational system incorporates three cushion billiards into the classes. So I throw my hands up in the air sometimes at this country. And
Yeah. Well, I think most people can agree that our system of education in the US is a little outdated maybe. But
no.
that's probably nothing that we can fix. We can't even fix pool, Rob. How are we going to fix that?
Oh, but we can work on changing
Use
the
pool to
culture
help
though,
fix
you know.
it.
We can do whatever part we can on helping change people's opinion on the game, you know, and maybe how they go and perceive it. So,
That's
yeah.
right. That's right, Mike. I like that. Everything you say positive about it helps. Every single
For
thing.
sure. Yep.
Yep. So, well, I wanted to talk about the juniors. We talked about the juniors. Everything on my radar is talked about. So, Rob, did you want to discuss anything, or is there anything else that you guys want to talk about before we tune out here?
Actually, yes, I have something marked. And you can see this book is a little bit tattered and torn. Let me hold it up here, and if you look in the front of it was to Bud from Jim, 1944. Okay? Bud was my wife's father. But there's something in here about lawyers that kind of struck me. And this one, it goes like this: the first lawyer. As soon as I realized it was a crooked business, I got out of it. The second lawyer, how much?
Wow.
What do you think? And this one,
I actually heard a really
another.
funny joke, Rob.
Another lawyer. And he ate his dinner in silence after you quarreled, huh? And the client, no, we had soup after
I actually heard a really, really, really
that.
funny joke, Rob. You want to hear my funny joke that I heard?
Yes, I do.
All right. So, guy wants to get a new dog, right? And his dog passed away, and you know he's looking for a new dog. So he checks Craigslist and sees an ad for it on Craigslist, and he's like, "Oh my god, a talking dog! This is amazing! What? This can't be real. Let me call up the number." So he calls up the number, and a guy answers, and he's like, "Oh, I'm looking for the talking dog. Are you the one that has it?" And he's like, "Yeah, I got the talking dog." And all of a sudden, you hear something in the background. You know, "Who are you talking to?" He's like, "I'm talking to, what's your name? Frank. Frank is interested in buying you." He's like, "Oh, that's pretty cool. Tell him to swing by," right? So he's like, "Oh my God, I'll be there in like 5 minutes." So he drives over there right away. And he, you know, he sees the guy. He's like, "Oh, hey, Frank, you know, like, where's the talking dog? I want to see the talking dog." And the dog comes in from the kitchen. He's like, "Hey, how's it going? My name's Skip." And he's like, "Oh my God, this is a talking dog." So he talks to the dog for a little while. The dog's telling him how he did a tour of Iraq, where he was helping the U.S. military out with fighting the Taliban. You know, Taliban's not afraid of a dog. It's just a dog. So it would go into the camp and get all the Taliban secrets. And it would come back and it would, you know, tell them to all of the U.S. Army. And that's how we defeated the Taliban in Iraq. And he's like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." He pulls the guy off to the side. He's like, "Why are you trying to get rid of this dog? It sounds amazing." He's like, "The dog is a complete liar. He's never even been to Iraq."
Okay, one more.
Well, everybody's funny, right?
You got to get them when you're laughing. One more. I got one more.
Oh my God,
that's a funny joke.
Okay, now these jokes are from 1944. Remember this.
This is what I you get at the Q and Up podcast.
I left a bottle of scotch in the train this morning, and the other guy, "Well, was it turned into the lost and found department?" And the guy says, "Well, no, but the fella who found it was."
I think that's a good way to end it, boys.
Yep, I think we're all done, huh? Yeah. I like my joke. I think it's funny.
That's great.
All right.
It was great.
Y'all all right. Well, that's
lying that's... piece of dog. Get him out of here.
All right. Well, little Chris liked my joke. That's all I care about. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for joining me again this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It has been an absolute blast.
See you, fellas. It's good to see you every week.
Yeah. And I guess until next week, take care, everyone. Everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.